Well, we've already discussed most of the particulars of meiosis, but we haven't really looked at the individual stages as shown in this picture, slide 7. This slide is very similar to one that we looked at in the mitosis chapter, but one huge difference has to do with the fact that there's two division events in meiosis. That's why there's the split here and then each of these split again. Once again, we're assuming that cytokinesis happens as well. Meiosis technically is just what happens to the nucleus. But to make fully separate cells, of course, you have to also have cytokinesis occurring. And so you have meiosis 1 overall, then meiosis 2, but each of those parts of meiosis is divided into the same subphases with the same names as mitosis. So you can say prophase of meiosis 1 or simply prophase 1. Prophase 1 indicates that you're talking about prophase of meiosis 1. There's a prophase 2 in meiosis 2 and so on. I'm not going to go through every one of these as laboriously as I did for mitosis because a lot of it is really basically the same stuff happening. I want to point out the differences compared to mitosis. And so it's important for you to remember what you've learned about mitosis. Keep that in mind and picture it. We're looking at a cell that has an N of what? What is N here? N is 3. How do you know that? Right. 3 different kinds of chromosomes, which you can base on their sizes. You have a big version, a middle, medium version, and a small version. And what's the ploidy? It is a diploid cell. Now that's important. That's actually an important distinction between meiosis and mitosis. Mitosis does not affect the ploidy. So a cell of any ploidy can enter mitosis. And it will simply make 2 exact copies of that cell, which therefore will have the same ploidy. It's maintained. A haploid cell undergoing mitosis will produce 2 haploid cells. A diploid cell will produce 2 diploid cells. Well, for meiosis, there is a reduction in ploidy. That's the reason it exists, really, right? To solve that problem of the doubling of ploidy that fertilization brings about. And therefore, it doesn't make sense to talk about a haploid cell entering meiosis. You can't cut the ploidy in half if the ploidy is already haploid, because there's only 1 of each chromosome type in a haploid cell by definition. So that's why we're starting with a diploid cell here. And to discuss these other important distinctions, I need to tell you that there are 3 major sources of additional genetic variation that sex accomplishes. That's what sex is all about, as you know, in comparison to asexual reproduction. There is a drastic increase in genetic variability for sexual species compared to asexual species. Remember that an asexual parent will produce offspring that are genetically identical to the parents, to the parent and to each other. So that's not genetic variability. Sex, on the other hand, produces genetically distinct individuals for all, however many offspring are produced. They'll all be different genetically, and they'll all be different from both parents genetically. That's the big thing about sex, this additional genetic variation. But there are 3 major ways that this happens. And let me just list them in the order in which they occur. The first is called crossing over. The second is called independent assortment. And the third is called random fertilization. Now, 2 of these, the first 2, occur before there's even any gametes produced before there's even any intent, so to speak, for reproduction. This happens in each parent. These first two happen in each parent, whether they're going to reproduce or not. And more specifically, these first two both occur not only in meiosis, but more specifically in meiosis one. And so those first two are shown as part of this slide, and I'll get to that in a minute. But let me first say that none of these three things that I just mentioned that increases genetic variation because of sex would happen if there weren't already genetic variation to begin with. Because all sex does is shuffle the deck, so to speak. It doesn't create new variation, really. Well, actually, it does. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. But what I'm saying is, by analogy with shuffling the deck, is that you have to have different kinds of cards to begin with for shuffling to matter, right? If you have a deck that is nothing but three of hearts, you can shuffle them as many times as you want, and everyone is going to get a hand dealt of three of hearts. It wouldn't matter at all. And none of these three things that I said in sex would matter if there weren't already different versions of DNA from individual to individual to begin with. And what is the original source of all genetic variation? Why is it that there's different versions of DNA that sex can then work on to shuffle? In other words, why are we not simply identical copies of the original successful cells that were the ancestor to all organisms? Mutation is the original source of all genetic variation. It's just accidental stuff that happens, right? That's what mutation is. Every time a mutation occurs, though, all of a sudden you have DNA that is at least a little bit different from other DNA that was not mutated. Once you have an accumulation of these mutations and therefore differences in genetic sequences from one individual to another, then sex can work. In other words, because of the mutation, you do have a deck of different cards, and shuffling will matter. All right, now let's look at prophase one. Right away, there's a huge difference compared to prophase of mitosis. So I want you to imagine mitosis. It's not what's shown here. This is meiosis. But imagine it in the same kind of cell. In other words, a cell with an N, as we said, of three, and it's diploid. Well, in mitosis, prophase of mitosis, you do not have the two number ones coming together. Each of the two number ones don't care what the other one is doing. Similarly for the two number twos and so on. But in meiosis, you have the two number ones finding each other and coming together. The two number twos finding each other and coming together. And so on for however, whatever N is. Right? Notice that the red version of the same kind of chromosome and the blue version are coming together for all the kinds. That coming together is called synapsis, which is a word that simply means coming together, really. To synapse, syn meaning together, means for two homologous chromosomes to come together. I did define homologous already, right? Okay. So two chromosomes are homologous only if they are of the same type. Large, medium, or small, in other words. The two large come together, and so on. Now, the two homologs not only find each other and come together, which is what synapsis is, but as part of that synapsis, they undergo crossing over, which is that first source of additional genetic variation that I mentioned that sex brings about. And crossing over is just what the phrase implies. Each of these two homologous chromosomes, remember, is replicated, right? So each one consists of two identical sister chromatids, two red ones and two blue ones. Crossing over is actual physical crossing over of a blue section of the length from one chromosome with the red section of the other. And so there is some specific point along the length of the chromosome at which that crossover occurs. And that's called a chiasma. The plural is given there. Chiasma, which means cross, is the singular. The plural is chiasmata. Now, a chiasma can form... Well, before I say that, let me say that when a chiasma forms, when you do have crossing over, it's not simply that they're crossing over. Wherever they cross over, all of the blue DNA beyond that point on the blue chromosome gets swapped with all the red DNA from that point forward on the other chromosome. So they trade part of their overall DNA sequence. The chromosome, remember, is one long DNA. But a part of it gets swapped blue for red, using these blue and red cartoon scheme, of course. It's not really blue and red. And as soon as that happens, and only for one chromosome, remember there's many chromosomes, but as soon as this happens just for one chromosome, right away you have DNA that has never existed before. Because that chromosome is now partially blue and partially red. It's a different sequence compared to either of the parents. One parent provided the blue version, one provided the red version. Well, this is not like either parent. It's a combination of both because of crossing over. And you have to appreciate the mathematics of this. Of the three sources of genetic variation that I talked about for sex, crossing over by far dominates with respect to how many possible ways it can happen is concerned. Because a chiasma, a crossover point, can occur just about anywhere along the entire length of the chromosome, which is millions of nucleotides long. So there's millions of possibilities just for one chromosome type. Which means the number of possible products, the number of possible new chromosomes that are partially blue and partially red, would be 2 raised to that number of possibilities as a power. Which is almost infinite. It makes the number of total atoms in the universe tiny by comparison. It's far bigger than that. And it's made even bigger when you can cross over twice with the same chromosome, plus you have multiple chromosomes that this is happening with. So it is effectively infinite, the genetic variation due just to crossing over by itself. But that happens when synapsis happens, which is in prophase 1, prophase of meiosis 1. Okay, we'll skip over pro-metaphase because nothing really interesting happens compared to mitosis there. Go to metaphase. Hopefully you remember that metaphase is defined by things lining up halfway between the poles, right? Well, what is it that lines up in metaphase of mitosis? Individual replicated chromosomes line up. And for a diploid cell, how many things total are lining up? in general, not specifically for humans. 2N things, if it's a diploid cell. So for humans, since N is 23, 46 things would be lining up in mitosis, metaphase of mitosis. Not so in meiosis. That's the huge difference. Instead of individual replicated chromosomes lining up at the metaphase plate, we have pairs of homologs, or homologous pairs of chromosomes, which you can call a homologous pair of chromosomes, but it goes by another name as well. That pair can be called a tetrad, which is a word that means a four-part thing, right? Tetra means four. It's a pair of chromosomes, but it's called a tetrad because these are replicated chromosomes. So each individual chromosome already is a two-part thing because it consists of two chromatids. And the pair, therefore, has four total chromatids. That's why we can call it a tetrad. We can see that happening here, though. That instead of 2N things lining up, it's N things that are lining up. N tetrads. Pairs of replicated chromosomes. All right, now I said that second source of additional variation is called independent assortment. So I want to talk about each of those two words in that phrase, starting with assortment. Assortment, in that sense, refers to how an individual tetrad, one pair of chromosomes, homologous chromosomes, lines up. And because, even though they're homologous, they're not identical. One's from one parent, one's from the other. One's red and one's blue. That means there's two ways that that tetrad can line up. It's very similar to the flipping of a coin. The tetrad itself is kind of like a coin, right? It has a blue end and a red end, like a heads and a tails. Assortment for a single tetrad refers to how it lines up. It can line up with red toward the top, blue toward the bottom, like this one is, or the other way around, blue up and red down. That's assortment by itself. Independent assortment refers to the fact that how one tetrad lines up, meaning blue up or red up, is completely independent of, does not at all depend on, how other tetrads line up. In other words, each individual tetrad is flipping its own coin. And you can see that right here, because they're not all blue down or red up and red up, or all red down and all blue up, right? Each one individually and randomly flipped its coin to see which color would go up and which color would go down. That is independent assortment. And that's the second source of additional genetic variation, because how they flip their coin determines which of the two cells this will split into gets which color for each individual kind of chromosome. Now, if you had an N of 1, yes, there's two ways it can flip its coin, but it doesn't really matter if you only have one, because one of the two cells is going to get the red one, the other one's going to get the blue one, right? Doesn't matter which one's up and which one's down. But when you have two or more, then it does matter, because with two you could have both red up, both blue down, or you could have the first red up, the second red down, right? And if you add a third, then for those two possibilities, for each of those two possibilities, you have two possibilities for the third. So it doubles every time you add another kind of chromosome. And mathematically, in general, the number of possible ways that independent assortment can line up the chromosomes, the tetrads, I should say, is equal to 2 to the n minus 1. Notice if n is 1, then it's simply one way. 2 to the 0 is 1. But for 2, it's 2 possibilities. For 3, it's 4, and so on. Well, for humans, it's 23. Remember, N is 23. So that means if you have all 23 tetrads working in a human, there are 2 to the 22nd power number of ways just that they can line up. And that's roughly 8 million or so, which seems like a big number, and it is a big number, but that 8 million number is just tiny, tiny compared to how many possible ways that crossing over can occur, which has already happened earlier. But the 8 million makes it even bigger, because whatever the number of possibilities is for crossing over, you then multiply that by the 8 million or so ways. So rather than being infinity, it's 8 million infinity. A truly enormous number, even for small n's. Okay, anyway, that's independent assortment. And notice that those are both happening in meiosis. Prophase 1 has crossing over. Metaphase is when independent assortment happens. Well, anaphase, remember, involves the actual separation, but this is an important difference between meiosis and mitosis as well. In mitosis, what separates?
Individual chromosomes.
No. No. Well, what actually separates from each other? Individual replicated chromosomes are lining up. Sister chromatids separate from each other and become unreplicated full chromosomes in their own right. Right?
Yeah.
Not true in meiosis, because what lined up is different. Tetrads line up at metaphase, and therefore what separates in anaphase 1 are homologs from each other. One homolog is going to go to one cell, the other homolog is going to go to the other cell. That's what reduces the ploidy, because this one cell has 2 of each kind, right? Well, when it splits, after anaphase, one cell is going to get only 1 of each kind, the other one's going to get only 1 of each kind. Both of those daughter cells of meiosis 1 are already going to be haploid. You see that? And because of crossing over and independent assortment, they'll be genetically different from each other. Some of them are going to get mostly red and somewhat blue. The other ones are going to get mostly blue and somewhat red. Okay. Telophase and cytokinesis happen basically just like mitosis. But at that point, halfway through meiosis, you have 2 distinct cells that are already genetically different from the cell you started with, because the ploidy is different for one thing, but also because of the 2 processes I talked about. But you're not done yet, even though you have accomplished the goal of meiosis, which is to reduce the ploidy. Why are we not done?
We still have another round of meiosis to go through.
Yeah, but why do we need it if we've already accomplished the goal? Yeah, you still have replicated chromosomes consisting of 2 chromatids, not 1. One chromatid is enough for a single cell. So these 2 daughter cells of meiosis 1 still have twice as much DNA as they need.
They're still diploid.
Well, no, they're haploid now. Haploidy occurs because anaphase separates homologs and they go into separate cells. After that, we no longer even use the word homologous, because the homologs are in separate cells at that point. All right, so meiosis 2 is required simply to separate the sister chromatids, which technically we call them sister chromatids still because they're connected to each other, but they're no longer identical to each other because of crossing over. All right? In other words, meiosis 2 has to accomplish exactly the same thing that mitosis accomplishes, and it is effectively the same process. It's just that you're starting with 2 cells that meiosis 1 puts out. They're already haploid, And therefore, just like mitosis, the ploidy doesn't change. You're simply separating the chromatids from each other. And since that's happening in each of the two cells that meiosis I produces, you end up with four distinct cells, assuming cytokinesis is happening as well. Four cells, all genetically different from each other, plus different from the original cell. Now, it's not just these four cells that are different. Every time this happens in the same individual, four new ones will be produced that have never been produced by that individual. So using humans as an example, a male human produces millions of different sperm, millions of sperm cells every day for decades. So that's a pretty big number of sperm over a lifetime. But the chance of any two of those sperm in his lifetime being identical genetically is zero. Because, I mean, even if he lived a million years, it would still be effectively zero. Because of the number of possible ways that crossing over and independent assortment can happen. So it's not just these four are different. Everyone is different for that same individual, no matter how many times he does it. Okay, so I've discussed two of these three sources of individual variation. And effectively, what we're talking about are decks of cards for each parent. Okay, I'm going to use card analogy again for the third. The third is random fertilization. That involves two parents, right? Fertilization involves a gamete from each parent. Well, random fertilization refers to the fact that when two parents reproduce sexually, one gamete is chosen from one parent randomly, and one gamete is chosen randomly from the other parent to produce the one zygote. And so because of these first two processes, that's analogous to each parent having an infinitely big deck of cards to choose randomly from, one card. And then you get those two cards together to form a zygote. That means the number of possible zygotes that could be produced is this ridiculously huge number of gamete number types squared, right? It's that times itself because you multiply it by the other parent's number of possibilities. Which is why you can reproduce as many offspring as you want sexually. You're not going to come up with two identical offspring. Now, there are identical twins, but that's an accident. That doesn't happen with different gametes. With identical twins, you have one sperm and one egg becoming one zygote, and then the zygote actually accidentally splits in that process, becomes two identical zygotes, each of which is the beginning of a new twin. That's why they're identical. It's an accident that happens. It would never happen when you use two different sperm and two different eggs because of the number of possibilities. All right, let's go to 8 and quickly review these important differences between mitosis and meiosis to go along with this slide. I've already said this, but it's worth going through this. First of all, mitosis does not change the ploidy, and therefore a cell of any ploidy can enter mitosis. Meiosis does change the ploidy. It cuts it in half. And so you have to have a diploid cell at least to enter meiosis. I say at least because there are some organisms, especially plants, some species of plants have higher levels of ploidy, like tetraploid. But you can't have a haploid cell entering meiosis is what I'm saying. Another big difference is that mitosis involves only one division event and therefore gives rise to two cells, whereas meiosis has two division events and therefore gives rise eventually to four cells. Not only is the ploidy maintained in mitosis, but the genetics is maintained. Both of the two cells that result are genetically identical to the original cell and to each other. But in meiosis, Not only is the ploidy different, which is enough to say that they're genetically different from the original cell, they're also different because of crossing over and because of independent assortment. Now notice that, well, what is the N here for both of these types of cells shown here? Right, it's 3 in both cases. They're both diploid to start, but notice that in metaphase it's 2N different things, which is 6. 2 times 3 is 6, lining up in mitosis, whereas it's N things, N pairs, lining up for meiosis. Metaphase 1 of meiosis. Okay, 9 is yet another summary, but I'm not going to read this to you just like other summaries. Just make sure that you understand these things, which I've already discussed. That brings us to 10. The book I got these slides from, actually, I wish they hadn't switched the order of 10 and 11, because 10 is a cartoon that shows you a close-up view of what happens in because of independent assortment. And 11, as we'll see, is a close-up of crossing over. Well, they've reversed the order in which these happen. Just keep in mind, crossing over happens first, and then independent assortment. But we're looking here at independent assortment. What's the N? 2. And the ploidy? Diploid, yes. So there's 2 kinds of chromosomes, and there's 2 of each of those 2 types, so it's diploid. This is showing you what I was talking about when I gave you the 2 to the N minus 1. You have to have an N of at least 2 for independent assortment to matter. But as soon as you have 2 or more, then you have multiple possibilities. Well, for N exactly equal to 2, there are 2 possibilities. Right? Either one cell is going to get both reds and the other is going to get both blues, or one's going to get one red and one blue, the other one's going to get one blue and one red. Notice that the daughter cells here show you that 2 of them are identical to each other. Well, the reason that doesn't actually happen, though, is because you don't have just independent assortment. Before this happens, you already have differences in the chromosomes because of crossing over, so they're really all 4 different. Eleven shows you crossing over. This happens earlier than independent assortment, specifically in prophase 1 of meiosis. And so a chiasma does not have to occur, but it usually does. And like I said, it can happen more than once on the same homologous pair. But you can see what I was trying to indicate with my fingers crossing. At the point of crossover, the chiasma, blue is swapped for red. And so a chiasma forms always in a way where the downstream part is the same size on both. Otherwise, it would lead to missing DNA in one and too much DNA in the other. Okay, so I think you get the point. I think maybe that's the last slide of it. Yes, it is. Yeah.
I'm a little confused on the 2 and the minus 1. Why was there the minus 1 and the 4 different?
Because if it's only an N of 1, then even though there's 2 ways it can line up, it doesn't matter. One of them's going to get the blue one, one of them's going to get the red one. So you have to have 2 different kinds of chromosomes, each of which is flipping its coin, for there to be different versions of cells possible. That's why it's N minus 1. If N is 1, then 2 to the N minus 1 is 2 to the 0, which is only one possibility. 2 to the 0 is 1. But for an N of 2, like we saw in slide 10, 2 to the N minus 1 is 2 to the 1, which is 2 possibilities. And for humans, 2 to the N minus 1 is 2 to the 22nd power, which is roughly 8 million, like I said. All right. Let me stop this recording.